Hello, OdaFest podcast listeners. Welcome back to our weekly Wednesday release. I am Jay, and I am here with my man, Angelo, and nobody else.
Wow, you're putting a lot of faith in me. Just saying the Wednesday release right in the thing. Oh my God.
Yeah. Stamping it right there for everyone to hear. Wednesdays.
Oh my Lord. I can do it.
You will do it.
I'll live up to your lofty expectations.
I mean, we've only had 306 episodes worth of such lofty expectations. Hopefully we can continue.
I will win the Video J Awards.
The Video J Awards, that's me. I don't give out awards, but I heard that the Game Awards, if that's what they're really called, gave out many awards, and only one game really won any of them.
Well. So, the Claire Obscure Expedition 33 Awards happened, and...
Yeah.
They certainly happened. I feel like no one was truly surprised that Claire Obscure... on its own, brought home 9 awards, because the Golden Joystick Awards that happened a few weeks ago gave us kind of a preview about what people were feeling. But Claire Obscure, Expedition 33, won Game of the Year. I believe it also won Best Indie Game, which a lot of people are feeling feelings over. Multiple Voice Actor Awards, sure. I believe. It won a lot. And as someone who didn't play it, I can wholly say that it deserved them.
I also have not played, so we are definitely the least qualified people to judge such a thing. However, obviously, there's a lot of fan voting, so the people have spoken.
Oh, yeah.
And also, just through the grapevine of nerdy friendship, everyone else I know has played this, and they have all said it is good. That's all.
Dio was absolutely obsessed with this game. In fact, they still are. With the Game Awards, the studio put out a brand new free DLC to expand upon the game. And Dio is currently playing that as we record. So,
makes sense.
I got all the secondhand information. I got Dio telling me exactly how good the game is. And I can tell you from a talking to your wife about it perspective, wonderful game. Yeah. Can recommend.
Mm-hmm. Interesting things. It's probably worth mentioning the categories that they lost in. They lost Best Audio Design to Battlefield 6. I don't know anything about Battlefield games, so sure, I guess it could lose to some game like Battlefield 6. In that category, there were also games like Ghost of Yote and Death Stranding 2 and Silent Hill F. I'm sure they were all deserving winners or nominees in their own right, but that's a category that Expedition actually lost in.
Wow.
Yeah. I know that they lost in something I thought was interesting. The categories that they won all major categories. You mentioned that they controversially sort of won for
the Indie Game Award.
We talked about it briefly, where they were nominated in that category because from a development perspective, yes, they are indie, but from a
budgetary and publishing standpoint, you could argue they're closer to AA. And personally, I really do feel like they hit AAA in certain areas. Like, while it is not the best looking game, I think it would be objectively false to say it is the best looking game. It is absolutely a gorgeous game. Like, the art design is on point. Things look fantastic. I think there are games that have maybe a better art style or better overall look, or maybe more lifelike looks, but it's absolutely a gorgeous game. At the same point, it's not competing on the AAA level. It wasn't an $80 game. It was like half of that, wasn't it?
I wouldn't know. I haven't thought about buying it, so I haven't looked at.
Oh my God. Is this another situation where we should have researched before hitting record? How dare we?
God forbid, no.
How dare we?
I don't need to do that. I need to wiki on the go.
Its full price is normally 65 Canadian, which is a lot less than $80.
That's what I thought was weird. It lost Player's Voice. I went back and looked.
player's voice.
Player's voice is the, yeah, that's their version of player's choice, which is the only category where it's 100% fan voted award. And from what I understand, Wuthering Waves, which is the, which was the winner,
whoa, really?
And beat out games like Dispatch, and Silk Song and Genshin and Clair Obscur. Wuthering is a mobile gacha game
made by miHoYo.
I'm pretty sure.
So, like, at least I believe is Wooa miHoYo.
No. It's Kuro Games. It says here.
Is
it published by miHoYo? I don't know.
No, it isn't.
Okay.
It's just that everybody compares it to miHoYo
to
so much.
Okay.
That I legitimately was baited and thought it was.
I didn't play Clair's Grove. I didn't play a lot of games this year. I've been playing a lot of friend slop games like Peak.
Of all the games that were nominated for anything at the Game Awards, the only three that I actually played were a Ball X Pit.
Yeah, which you talked about.
Elden Ring Night Ring. And my goat. My girls. My Uma Musume.
Did Uma win Best Mobile?
Best Mobile Game.
I don't know. I don't remember. I've been browsing through.
Didn't they? Yes, Uma Musume completely won the Best Mobile Game. Yeah, it beat it out over Destiny Rising, Persona 5, The Phantom X, Sonic Rumble, and Wooa.
But this was a really, really strong year for games in general.
It really was.
Now, like I said, I haven't played Clair Obscur, so I can't give the best view here. But I would say if Clair Obscur is not one of like the best games of the last 10 years, the bumper crop of games this year alone, it's an A-tier crop of games.
This year was an insanely good year for video games. Unless you worked for video games.
True. But yeah, you had games like Split Fiction. You had games like Death Stranding 2. Of course, Silk Song after a long time came through. Hades. Well, specifically Hades 2.
Hades Nuts.
Whoa. It was just an incredibly strong year for games. There was like even the meme games. I'm gonna call Uma Musume a meme game a little bit.
What I'm surprised about Uma Musume even being nominated is that Uma Musume, it's new to us, but it's not a new game.
No, it's not.
Uma Musume came out, I believe, 4 years ago in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Something crazy like that. It's been years. And if you wanted to play it, you had to do some crazy bullshit. You had to make sure that you could get yourself like a Japanese Google Play account and everything.
Yeah.
You had to spoof your location. You had to do a whole lot of work to actually play it outside of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an old game.
No Man's Sky won Best Ongoing again. I think that's the second time they've won, if I remember correctly.
That is the second time they've won that, which, good for them.
Yeah. It was a really, really good year, and not even mentioning other games that were sort of dark horses, like Dispatch came through. I want to play it. I just don't have the time right now to commit to it, but I definitely have that on my list.
Dispatch is one of those games where you can watch it and you can enjoy it, but because it's more of a series of cutscenes more than a game.
Sure.
I feel like it's something where you can watch someone stream it and get 90% of the...
Like a visual novel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Having that said, the video game aspect that it does have, it's got this video game, you get to dispatch superheroes to different crime scenes or events.
Yeah, it's like whether they're the best suited
hero.
That
looks really fun. Like, I feel like that could be a core game of its own.
Oh, absolutely.
Get rid of all the cutscenes and give us just that.
Sure. But they went with a very story-heavy design versus a gameplay delivery design, which is fine.
Yeah.
So I watched a little bit of it. I'm not really interested in the genre or the game itself, but I watched a little bit of some of my favorite streamers play it. It was Kingdom Come Deliverance, and I heard it was really good, and I watched some, and I can see where, like, if you're a fan of that genre
It got nominated for Best RPG.
So Kingdom Come, I think, another year wins awards that got taken away by Clair Obscur.
Oh, yeah.
Like
Clair Obscur, it is no hyperbole to say it completely sweeped. People are calling it the Expedition 33 Awards for a reason.
Absolutely.
They were the Goliath and there was no David.
But let's talk about the really fun stuff at the awards. Because like everyone already knows. Yeah, everyone already knows. Again, the winners.
Everybody shows up for the commercials.
Yes, it's the Super Bowl.
That is saying more this year than ever. Because apparently, a 3-minute trailer slot for the Game Awards cost $1 million. $1 million.
Now, in fairness, that's not even close to Super Bowl money, where I think that's a...
That's not close to Super Bowl
a
money.
A 30-second slot at the Super Bowl, I can look it up, but I remember years ago, a 30-second slot was already $1 million.
Yeah. The Game Awards is nothing to them.
$8 million in 2025 for a Super Bowl 30-second ad.
Oh, my God.
Jesus. I mean, I get it. It's a different audience. But it's actually, arguably, it's a less global audience than...
It is.
...than the Game Awards. But anyways, I digress. There are many cool things. I want to start with Flute Guy. I'm going to start with Flute Guy right off the bat. He's just such a good dude.
Flute Guy was amazing this year.
Let's put some respect on his name. What is his name?
The name, the title, properly fitting of Flute Guy, is Mr. Pedro Eustache.
That is a appropriate Flute Guy name.
That is absolutely what a Flute Guy should be named. And while I would argue that they were very nonchalant about a lot of the awards, they would just bang out 3 awards in like 30 seconds. It was crazy sometimes. Leading up to the final award, they did a giant orchestral arrangement, and Flute Guy was damn near the focal point of it. And every single song, there would be someone who would ferry out a new flute for Flute Guy. Flute Guy, every time the camera was on him, they had a different flute, and they were going hard. Sometimes there was like a very traditional wooden flute. Sometimes you had like the ornate brass flutes. Your boy had a flute made of PVC tubes.
Oops.
Your boy had another flute taller than he was.
I did not know they made flutes like that. I think I would have called it like a bassoon.
It was honestly amazing. To say it was breathtaking for me is an understatement, because your boy is the one using every bit of his breath.
The man's got lungs to surpass Metal Gear.
Exactly. And God, it was just, it was so awesome. Your boy, Pedro Eustache, he's actually got a post up on X, up on Bird App, explicitly about all of the flutes that he used during the Game Awards and talking about them, what they're called, what they're good for, giving a proper example on their own. It is extremely interesting, and I do recommend people go look it up. His account is just Eustache Pedro on X. And you gotta love good music. Especially good music by an eccentric genius. Hell yeah.
Pedro Eustache. Flute Guy.
In other news, remember how back in the early days of Kickstarter, our boy, Keiji Inafune, was like, Capcom wouldn't let me make more Mega Man, so come give me money to make the Mighty Number 9. And then everybody hated the game.
Yeah.
Well, Capcom said F that guy and made new Mega Man.
My God.
And it looks very Mega Man, explicitly. When I watched the trailer, I was looking at it and I was thinking, this looks and feels like if they took Mega Man 8 and remade it in 3D, this is, the timing looks right. The platforming looks right. The character, the proportions and everything look correct. I wonder if it will feel like a new game, if it will feel like retro Mega Man, or be retro Mega Man inspired but built for a new audience. I don't know.
Look, while I have been a lifelong fan of Mega Man slash Rockman games, whether it was 2D platforming or the Mega Man Network games.
The Mega Man Battle Network games were so good.
Yeah, Battle Network is like an underrated branch of that series. I hope they get back to that. But my heart still pines for Mega Man Legends. That's oh. what I actually wanted.
Oh, you're one of those.
Oh, yeah. I played one fully. I did not complete two, and then three just never happened. So when we say the words 3D Mega Man, it triggers something, okay?
I never actually played Mega Man Legends.
Okay, so here's the thing.
I don't know what it actually plays like.
It's a fun game, but I don't think you would like it now. Like, it's older, it doesn't hold up as well. But the number one thing that doesn't hold up is the control scheme, which is really unfortunate.
Okay.
It just feels very, unfortunately, it feels clunky. It's really, like, of course, given enough time to play, you would adjust and you'd be like, sure, this is fun. I like the characterizations of how the NPCs are all written. I like the overall gameplay. I would not necessarily go back to play them because of the control schemes. Like, it's not as fun as like a Super Mario 64, where like the movement is fluid and, you know, it doesn't feel clunky.
Because it was so early in the development of 3D games. And on top of that, because the Nintendo 64 had such a wonky controller.
Well, it was also a PS1 game.
Oh, was it? All right.
Yes.
Well, also PS1s, you couldn't count on having analog sticks.
Yes.
Like, 3D controls at that point in time were not well just say awful. Understood.
Just say what you mean. They were not good.
So it's actually fair that they didn't know how to make the game control good. Now, having that said, I know the art of the game. And my personal opinion is that Mega Man Legends' role is the best character-developed role out of any of the Mega Man games.
That's probably true.
She looks the coolest.
Yes. You said the word 3D Mega Man, and I was just like, one day.
Remember what they took from you.
It's true. I live only because Mega Man Legends 3 did not. You brought up Mighty No. 9, which is also kind of a sore point. I almost put money into that Kickstarter.
I believed in it, but I didn't have money at the time. And well thank done. God. Mm-hmm. Because now I was on Keiji Inafune's side.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, the Capcom execs are keeping
they
you
took
down.
It from him.
No, the Capcom execs were entirely correct. Because instead of taking the money he got and making a video game with it, he kept expanding the media franchise without finishing anything.
True.
And then by the time the game finally came out, it just sucked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I remember right, that game took 3 Kickstarter rounds to actually get fully funded and released. It was stupid.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I hope that it's a kind of like a kicking off point for almost a reboot of the franchise as a whole, including things that maybe we could get new Battle Network games, we could get maybe a new Legends game, but it has to do well enough for people to show interest for like that, not only just the retro style of 2D platforming, but also the interest in the franchise as a whole. We'll see. I hope. Yeah. I can hope.
We'll see. But a different thing happened around the time of the Game Awards. A mysterious sculpture appeared in the desert. This giant, gnarly, spindly fanged sculpture that looked horrifying.
It honestly looked like
ominous.
What happens when Sauron has too much cheese and takes a giant dump.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like. It looks like Sauron's indigestion. And then everyone was surprised to find that statue moved to the Game Awards itself. And then finally, a bunch of medieval peasants walked onto the stage, began getting raptured,
true.
And a trailer begun, as one does. Everybody needs a few peasants to be raptured before their trailer starts, right?
Mm-hmm. Standard. Yeah. Industry standard.
So a new trailer for Divinity by Larian Studios dropped, And I think along with that trailer, probably two-thirds of the audience, their jaw dropped too. It was a little bit explicit. I believe that you basically have to... I'm pretty sure that trailer is one of the few rated M trailers.
Alone. Yeah.
If not, it's very borderline rated M.
Oh, I mean, there's basically a little bit of everything other than like... The weird, like, I guess you could say, like, there's violence, there's gore, there's, like, religious overtones, there's sex.
Oh, there was sex on screen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not like, it's overt, but it wasn't overt in some way, but you know it's sex. And then, I guess the only thing they didn't really have was, there wasn't a lot of swearing, I guess. So there was there was very little naughty language.
Maybe if they dropped an F-bomb or two. Yeah. Then it would be too much for YouTube.
Too much.
Too much. But Larian Studios themselves came out and were like, we didn't put this trailer out to, like, make you shocked or disgusted. We wanted to treat the audience with respect and suggest that they have intelligence to navigate these themes. That was their response to the trailer that did, in fact, shock everybody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But new Divinity game. And oh my god, if they don't have my attention now.
I mean...
I've never played a Divinity game before, but when the guy started... When blood started spurting out of his chest and plopped on the ground and then screaming flowers grew where the blood dripped out. That, I mean, I was like, well, this is pretty gnarly.
If you've never played... I've never played original Divinity, Original Sin, but I have played Div 2. I haven't completed it yet because, like many RPGs, it's not that I lose interest. It's that I don't have the time to come back all, like, you know, consistently. It's bad. It's like committing to D&D in a sense. Angelo, if you ever pick up Div 2, I will play through the story campaign with you for sure.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things about it. It is a multiplayer RPG, isn't it?
Yes, and what's cool about it, if you're not as familiar, is that not only can you create your own character to play through, but they also have pre-rolled characters for you. And the best thing about the pre-rolled characters is because they have their lore entrenched within the storyline. So when you choose a character, they have inclinations and implications in the storyline, as opposed to when you make your custom character, unfortunately they can't link as much. Yeah, they're just a guy. But if you choose
the characters have
lore.
Okay, that's interesting.
So it's really, really fun. There's a character that everybody likes to play. His name is Fane. He's like an undead. So he has this thing where he has this magic mask that always comes with him, and it's to make him look human to others, so that he's not perceived as an undead just running around the world kind of thing. But there's kind of like this red lizard character, there's a few humans, there's a dwarf. It's a good time. I would really recommend it. If you ever pick it up, I would love to play that single player, maybe even complete the single player for once with a friend.
Oh my. Oh my. Now. The Game Awards, they were pretty fucking cool. They were pretty heckin' gnarly. But did you know? Christmas is only 7 days away.
That's a jump scare.
Christmas, only 7 days away. I'm so happy to learn this information. Hooray. To be fair, if you are listening to this on the day that it releases, 1 week from now is Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So 1 week from now, you literally have hours to figure things out. Make sure you're stocked up on whatever rum or liquor or eggnog or drinks you need. Any wrapping paper, cards, last ditch effort for random gifts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Maybe stock up on Terry's chocolate oranges. Who knows? Everybody needs the emergency chocolate orange.
I do like a chocolate orange.
But it's soon. Too soon.
Too soon. I honestly, it snuck up on me this year. It came faster than I expected. I think I've been really busy at work, which doesn't help. Like, the day's just blaze by a little bit, and here we are.
They really do. A weird thing, since I don't work retail anymore, and I don't go out shopping very much, and I don't watch TV, I don't really get bombarded with Christmassy ads the way I used to, or Christmas music for that matter. So I'm like, oh, it's halfway through December. I guess it really is Christmas. And it didn't really hit me. This is going to be the dumbest stereotype that I'm living up to right now. I was in a Discord last night and they were doing a movie night and they were playing Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, Hans Gruber just fell from the 30th floor of Nakatomi Plaza. Jesus Christ, Christmas is soon.
Yeah. It snuck up a little bit. My partner and I just got our Christmas cards done. We have a dog, so we kind of do these custom Christmas cards. You know, the gift buying is like, I think in the 80 to 90% range done, which is good. We're not hosting anybody this year because we haven't hosted anyone really. We've just had people come over, but we haven't really like hosted anything big yet. I think that's a next year thing. I think I talked about wanting to put up Christmas lights, but I only want to do permanent installation lights, and we didn't want to do them this year. Partially because we just bought a house as a whole. So didn't want to add any more debt.
You didn't want to put that much more money down.
Yeah.
Like, you bought a house, you just went to Japan, your wallet is feeling a little skinny.
Yes, I haven't won the lottery yet, unfortunately. So, you know, these are all want things, not need things. And because this is the first winter for me owning a house, I am still like, even though we've had some like hard freezes so far, and now we're going through our first warming period, and then we're probably going to go into another freeze pretty soon, I'm still like needing to see how the house internals hold up, like the furnace and plumbing and stuff, like through a winter. So I'm trying to be patient, and I'm trying to see how things, you know, hold up, and hopefully nothing bursts or dies or whatnot. You know?
Exactly. No, that makes sense. I was actually talking to the HVAC guy at my workplace last week, just on unrelated things.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that he was saying was that, you know, if you have a furnace and it's anywhere from 5 to 10 years old, just go look up the parts. Look up the parts for it. And
Yes.
Is like $20 or under, just buy one. Just straight up order one. So that when the furnace is 15 to 20 years old and something fails on it, the repair guy will come out and you'll be like, yeah, I have these parts. If it's one of these parts, just replace it right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Without getting too much into it, I think it'll be something that we're just going to be patient on and see what happens. And in the meantime, other more, let's say, decorative accoutrements for said home will have to wait a little bit longer. But like I said, we want to buy those like nicer house lights. And apparently they, you know, the price and the labor and the parts costs come down, for example, in May or June when nobody is getting these installed. So,
oh, interesting.
We're just going to wait a little bit when the off season.
On one hand, that makes sense. On the other hand, if there is stock at all, I guess because they're a permanent installation thing, there would be more stock.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, like, certain items are just so seasonal that you can't find them out of the season. You know what I mean? And I just figured even permanent Christmas lights would be like that.
If it's not, well, when they're not installing permanent Christmas lights, they're installing, like, groundskeeping type stuff. Like, not groundskeeping, like, I don't know, track lighting for like paths, garden paths, like, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So okay, they still do like their only business is not just trim installations. Is my understanding.
I get you. Now, another thing that we've spoken about on the podcast many times, and that I've agreed with in the past, and I still think there's very good use for it, is Birdloaf. You famously advocate for it. And I do agree. Birdloaf, is extremely easy and very delicious. Like, I have bought bird loaf probably 4 or 5 times now. And the only regret that I ever have from it is that I don't have enough leftovers. To some people, that's actually going to be a positive, that they don't have to worry about the leftovers.
That's true.
But for whatever reason, I was at the grocery store today. I was walking home from work, and I was like, well, we got to start thinking about what we're doing for Christmas dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the bird loaf aisle, the meat area, the meat aisle. And I saw the boxes of bird loaf, and they were $28 marked down to $22 or whatever it was.
Yes.
And I was thinking on them. And right beside them were the whole birds.
Yes.
They were the full turkeys. And I was looking at them and I was like, well, the turkey is on sale as well as the bird loaf. This turkey is $19 as opposed to $22 for the bird loaf. This turkey is heavier than the other box. Look at the bird loaf. And I was like, okay, it's 1.2 kilograms. Understandable.
Mm-hmm.
That is a reasonable portion of meat for a few people to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the turkey. I look at the weight of it. And it is 4.5 kilograms. And I'm just like, you know,
the math, yeah.
Even though the bird loaf is so much easier to cook, so much faster to cook, so much less headache than dealing with a full turkey.
Yes.
The math only maths in one direction. And if I truly want to be a cheap bastard, spending less money and getting more meat for it, I have to do it.
So I think the way that the math works for a bird loaf, not surprisingly, I believe it's half a bird. I think it's half a turkey worth of meat versus a full turkey's worth of meat.
I would understand.
I think that's how they justify it. And then the other part is, like, you know, it saves you on deboning and it saves you from trussing and doing basically all the prep. So,
no, 100%.
I do get it. It's a paid convenience. That being said,
it is convenience.
Sometimes the bird loaf does come down even more. I've bought it at like $16 per box, which is pretty good.
Yeah. Now, even at that price, the full turkey is still more meat.
But it does have bone, so you're paying for bone weight.
Exactly. I'm probably getting 2 to 2.5 times the meat, and then with the bones left over, I'll make soup.
I think it's probably like you have the bones and you have to pay. You're buying the what's the other word for innards? But it is the innards.
Oh, you mean like the gizzard, the heart, the neck?
Yes, but it comes in like a little bag, and then there's actually a little...
Giblets.
Giblets, thank you, yes.
Giblets.
So yeah, like you're paying for that, and if some people don't know what to do with that... Now, I know that you and I, we know what we're doing. It's not that it's not going to be of any use. I will just straight up roast the neck, and I will use it for drippings, and then I will still eat the meat off the neck because it's still good meat, you know?
And then the bones go in soup.
Yep. Those are all good points. But
if you want to be really fancy about it, toast the bones before putting them in
roast,
soup.
Roast, yes. Yeah. But I mean, I get it. There's nothing wrong with either one.
It is dedicating myself to more work is what it comes down
yes.
to.
Yes. If anyone is like, you want the meat without the work, loaf is great. I will always advocate for loaf. I haven't thought about making loaf, but I might make loaf this year anyways, just between my partner and I, so that we have a loaf around. We both like turkey.
Well, not gonna lie, if it's for two people,
that is
100%. You're gonna fill up on turkey. You're gonna have a good amount of turkey. You're gonna have a little. You're gonna have turkey left over. You're gonna be happy about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Turkey stuffing. Mashed potatoes. Oh, we have Brussels sprouts. We got some extra Brussels sprouts.
Oh, nice.
Love me a good Brussels sprout. Did you know that Brussels sprouts have been engineered over the last 15 to 20 years?
I didn't know that, but I would believe you. Go on.
So Brussels sprouts existed before that, Brussels sprouts are also part of the broccoli family. So things like...
They are literally broccoli.
Yeah, it's kale, broccoli, Brussels sprouts. I don't think cauliflower is part of that family.
No, yes, it is.
Is it?
It's a brassica. The whole company, rather, the whole family. No, it is literally the same plant.
Yeah, brassica.
It is the dog of the vegetable world, where you have literally the same species of plant that expresses itself in many different ways.
Yeah, we've selectively bred for things. So, for example, kale is literally the leafy part. And we just kept on selecting for the leafiest part of the brassica vegetable. And that's when it became kale. For technically, I think broccoli is the flower.
Yes.
And flower, and we've developed that. Anyways.
Broccoli and cauliflower are both the flower, but also expressed in different ways.
Plants do that in general.
It is a weird plant.
Yeah. But anyway, long story short, is that Brussels sprouts, they've been around for a while, longer than the 20 years that we talk about. But the reason why a lot of people, let's say in their 30s, 40s, 50s, some of them really don't like Brussels sprouts, because growing up, they were made to eat them. And growing up, they were actually more bitter back in the day. They've actually bred out and lessened a lot of the bitter tastes.
I remember that. And here's another thing. Like, a lot of the times, for whatever reason, back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, older people, like the generation that became our parents, they liked to boil and steam vegetables.
Yes, and that is...
It cooks them, but it is, I argue, the worst way to cook vegetables.
And they probably didn't season them very much, and
they didn't
dress them in any way. Like, even if you boil, like, a veg... I think you could, if you add just a little bit of seasoning salt and maybe...
But the interesting part about what you're saying is...
You know?
If you boiled a Brussels sprout, I feel like that would take away some of the bitter compounds. Whereas if you just roasted it, it would keep all those compounds still there.
I think it breaks down with heat in general. But it could also just be... Then you could argue that the texture of boiled vegetables isn't the preferred... Like, you know, texture for most people. Anyways, Brussels sprouts, tasty. We have some. We have some bacon bits. We have some balsamic vinegar to go with it. Or we have cheese. Nice. We have lots of cheese right now. And we have a lot of chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I was also at the grocery store today. I was at the Midtown Co-op. Because this information might still be relevant.
Midtown
a lot of their
girl.
Cheeses were on sale.
Go if you can.
Like, I got an aged Gouda that was normally $12 on for $6.
Hell yeah.
I got some nice little wheels of brie that were like $3 for $5. Not $3 for $5. They were $3 for $15 or $5 a piece. There were a couple bucks off per wheel. Mm-hmm. There was some blocks of Havarti that were down.
Yo,
like a few
Havarti? I love a good Havarti.
The thing about Havarti, I love Havarti. There is 100 variations of Havarti. Havarti is the brassica of cheese.
But Havarti's also, I think it's an underappreciated cheese in a sense, because people will always talk about sort of its cousin cheeses, like it's the Swisses and the Brie. Brie gets a lot. Like, Brie is not exactly like Havarti, but Havarti's heartier than...
Havarti is basically if mozzarella had flavor.
Or I think like Gouda. Gouda also gets a lot more recognition than Havarti does. Not that Gouda is bad. Just to be clear, I am not saying any other cheese is bad. I just think that Havarti really fits well.
So the thing about Havarti on its own, I think, is a good cheese, but it is not the most interesting cheese on its own. What's really surprising about Havarti is that it takes flavor extremely well. Mm-hmm. Like, you can get the spicy Havartis, like jalapeno or habanero Havarti. You can get wine Havartis. You can get smoked Havartis. Yes. The one that I picked up, it calls itself a crunchy caramel Havarti.
Cool.
Yeah.
We went to Costco. We picked up some of those, the cranberry goat cheeses. Those are real nice. And we just picked up crackers for those today. We also have a like big triple creme brie.
Nice.
So we're going to throw that in the oven. That'll be good.
So that's one thing. They did have multiple. They had some larger brie and some smaller brie on. I was thinking about getting the big brie, but there was a coconut cream brie and then a regular triple brie. And I was like, well, I could get two of these for the same price as the big one.
That's fair.
Yeah.
We were at Costco, so, you know, we were just happy that they didn't try to give us cheese to last for the, like, 16 winters or whatnot.
You were like, well, thank God I can get one cheese instead of 45 pounds of cheese.
Yes. Even though my heart desires 45 pounds of cheese, and yes, I have a house, I cannot feasibly store 45 pounds of cheese.
Exactly. I remember that. The first time Dio and I went to Costco on our own and we didn't entirely understand what we were doing, we bought one pack of muffins, and then we went to the checkout, and they were like, oh, well, these aren't, like, you don't buy just one pack of these giant-ass fucking muffins. You need to get two of them. And you're like, wait, what? So I'm running across the entire Costco to get the other pack of muffins.
Yeah.
We get these pack of muffins. We're two people. And these muffins
are, like, the size of your face.
Each muffin is 800 calories. Literally, each of these muffins is like half of the energy we should be eating in a day.
It's funny because
they don't last that long.
Sometimes on my Reddit feed, like I browse Reddit very casually, and one of the subreddits that shows up sometimes is Costco Canada. You're not the first one to mention that they are, in a sense, upset about the muffin deal, because they're like, why can't they just split the muffins? Like, let me pay half price, or just let me take only one. I don't care. I want your muffins. It's a good deal. I thought it was a good deal for one box. It's totally fine. Just let me take one. I can't handle two. And it's actually a complaint.
No, to be fair, don't change, Costco. Please don't change.
Especially the hot dog.
This is
I'll kill you. I'll kill you if you change the hot dog.
What I should actually be doing is just bringing the second box of muffins to work and dispersing them amongst my coworkers.
True. Goodwill. Goodwill to all.
But when you have 12 of these giant muffins, and they're very, very delicious muffins, the problem isn't that I can't eat them. It's that I shouldn't eat them.
True. It's okay. Yeah. It's crimis.
It's crimis.
Yeah. I told my doctor, they're like, how are you doing with your diet and your health? I'm like,
doctor, it's Christmas.
Yeah, I was just like, but sir, it's Christmas, sir. The calories, sir.
I'm pretty sure I've consumed 12,000 calories of eggnog alone so far.
Yeah, like I said, I'm pretty sure you and like three other dudes are the ones propping up the entire industry.
Yeah. I bought another carton today.
Jesus.
I bought another carton just so that I wouldn't go through all of the alcoholic eggnog that I've made, which is delicious, by the way. It's fully aged now. It's properly good. It is so good, but it's very boozy, and I need to save some of it for actual Christmas.
Fair. On a very, very quick last note here, because we're rapidly approaching the end of the episode, I finally got my flower seeds in. The osmanthus is now planted. Yeah, that we're waiting for the seed to hopefully germinate, and hopefully we can get some osmanthus growing, and then maybe we can link up your mead operations with my osmanthus offerings.
Osmanthus wine tastes the same as I remember, but where are those who share the memories?
The next week of the RFS podcast? Is that where they are?
That's where they are.
Awesome.
Bye.
Merry Christmas. Goodbye now.
Merry Christmas.
Christmas.